Hey, it's David Cherry, and welcome to the show. This podcast helps you stay in tune with the new energy around community and brand building, sharing conversations with some of my friends and my favorite online founders and creators about how they built a brand and community around what they do. And as always, if you want to reach out, just look me up in the show notes, check out the guest links. Thanks for tuning in. All right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode. I am here with Kay Hee from Rad Reads. Kay, how you doing?
I am doing well, David. What's going on, man?
Happy to see you again. And fun even catching up just for a minute, hitting record. I feel like you've been diving really deep into the Notion world. I know last time we spoke, we were catching up a bit more on some of the Rad Reads side of things and also your transition. And so I'm curious, we're going to get into this, like, you know, how you're working with Notion, but also your Rad Reads community and some of your initial spark that had you leaving corporate America and jumping in to do things, you know, on your own. So I guess I'm curious just to start with, like, you know, a little bit of a status update, like, where have you been spending your time mostly these days? Like, how's stuff been going? I know it's a crazy year. What's new, man?
What's good? Well, first, thanks for having me on, fellow Angelino, though I still feel so distant from you. So I guess I've always been, you know, two things, the accidental entrepreneur and the fast tortoise. So I've kind of just bumbled along following my nose and my intuition for almost 6 years now. And I really am not, I don't play for viral hits. I'm the money ball guy. Want to just get on first base every time. And then you do that for 6 years and, you know, you're scoring runs, you're winning games, maybe you're winning championships. So when we last spoke, I probably was in the first or second cohort of my Notion course called Supercharge Your Productivity. And again, that really just came from me making Loom videos as a power user of Notion on Twitter and sharing them on Twitter. I had, as we talked about, I had a you know, decent sized audience. So my email list would kind of follow along. And what happened, it really, you know, classic reverse product market fit where my followers, my readers said, that's cool what you're doing. I got no effing clue how to do it myself. And then, you know, 5 years of entrepreneurship, I'm like, light bulb, make a course. And I've been lucky. I'm good friends with Tiago Forte. He's, you know, years ahead of me in the online education world. And he's like, yeah, just slap a Gumroad page, make it cohort. He's very, very, very strong, feel strongly about cohort based versus evergreen. And so that started this Notion course. And we're about to do our fifth. I think we have 200 graduates so far. My indications for this next cohort, we're doing about one every 3 months, is probably like 150 students. So far we've had 35 countries, students from 35 different countries. It's US minority now, the student body. It's unbelievable. And so there's the Rad Reads community, there's the Notion community. I don't view them as separate, but obviously the door in which you enter my work, they're different. Right. And we can talk about, you know, merging them or keeping them separate, but yeah, to recap, I'd say my focus, like 80% of my focus now is on this course. We could talk about the 10K work framework, which is really kind of the overarching framework where everything fits into, and it's kind of a neat concept. Still doing a little bit of coaching, but not really taking on many new clients. So it's funny that in a year, my revenue would have gone 90% coaching, 10% digital to 90% digital, 10% offline.
Amazing. Wow. So cool to hear how much that's grown since the last time we spoke. I feel like there's so many things you mentioned there that I already want to dig into. I'm like taking mental pin notes, like, and I love the way that you talk about sort of what you do, because I think for a lot of people, diving into this world is scary. It's hard to get started. And you see the people who are super successful, right? Like you see the people who are already way further ahead, killing it. And so it's like, how do I get started? And I just feel like I have to be so far along. Mm-hmm. And so this, I don't know, what'd you call it? The speedy tortoise.
Yeah. The fast tortoise. The
fast tortoise. Yeah. Like that's a great mindset. Mm-hmm. I feel like you could do something just even specifically on that, 'cause I think it resonates with so many people. And so I'm really interested in kind of hearing how you did shift from this coaching based model to this sort of, you know, cohort based model. Like, how did you, what really inspired that change? I suppose, I mean, obviously you started getting into Notion, maybe you met Tiago, and then it seems like the tough thing to really balance is that you have income needs now, right? And the course piece, it's not going to be a home run right away. So how did you get through that aspect? And maybe that's where the 10K work comes in, but it's like, yeah, how do you go through that transition and stay sane and motivated and, you know?
Yeah, it's, so think of like, if you've ever DJed, it's like the crossfader, right? Where you're going from, you know, Biggie on one side and, you know, your favorite, you know, Dr. Dre or Pac song on the other. At some point, you know, you're just blending in and out, right? It's not binary. It's not like you like snap your, I didn't go from 90-10 to 10-90. I mean, the window is quick, right? It's been eight months, but incrementally it's actually been quite slow. And so quite gradual and very strategic. So, so to answer your question, like how did that switch happen? I think that, one of them, and it does, fall under this framework. And let me just set up the framework real quickly. Please. It's a 2x2 matrix. And on one axis, you have skill, low skill, high skill. And on the other axis, you have leverage, low leverage, high leverage. And so if you think low skill, low leverage, that's responding to YouTube comments, getting to inbox zero. Low skill, high leverage, you're leveraging the wrong thing. So an example of that could be learning GTD, right? Jeff Bezos doesn't know GTD. It doesn't matter to him. You know, what matters to him is, can he get, you know, Steve Mnuchin on the phone and talk antitrust? That's the only thing that matters to him. And so, but you know, early in your career, that stuff makes a big difference. Later in your career, Jeff Bezos don't give a damn about Notion. Then there's that sweet spot where everyone's kind of angling for high skill, low leverage. That's where my coaching practice falls. That's trading time for money. That's the Skadden partner that bills, you know, $11.50 an hour. Great life. 99% of the population would be happy with that life. Problem is when that stops, the income stops. There's no leverage. And so then the last thing is high leverage, high skill, high leverage. And that's like, and people always think that that's like having tons of capital like to invest. Like, no. High skill, high leverage is, imagine if I had a ghostwriter and I just leveraged my brand and someone could replicate my voice perfectly. I don't plan on doing that, but think about that, right? Think about Tony Robbins franchising his events across to facilitators. Think about hiring a head of sales. You know, you're fighting to make one sales calls a day, he or she makes 10 a day and closes at a higher rate than you. So that's the matrix, right? And so, you know, the goal is to move across it, not necessarily because you want to be richer. That could be one reason. You might want more autonomy. You might want to work on more meaningful things. Like, I think the important thing is to not get lost in the numbers, but just to look at the leverage, right? If they're just responding to YouTube comments and recruiting a head of sales, one is 100 times more valuable than the other. That's really the number to anchor to. So back to where I was. I was coaching, high skill, low leverage. I've got a unique client base. They pay me well, but it's very difficult, very exhausting, and it's totally not scalable. Great life. I could have stopped there. So I was doing that and tinkering, experimenting, really like actually thinking about where the scale was, like the leverage. And a lot of that leverage for me was in audience development, personal brand, you know, all the stuff that they talk about, but, you know, having done it for 5 years. And so what happened was that as I started to get these green shoots, I did the first course, I think it was 20 students, maybe just stop taking clients for a couple months or don't refresh the one client that turned off. Then you get to the fifth cohort where it's full on a business now. I have customers, like customer support, refunds, payments, ops, marketing, copywriting, community building. I'm doing a lot of it, and I've made some hires that we could talk about. But you're now I'm building a business, right? And I'm slowly starting to pull myself out. Like, yes, Kay still writes every email from the funnel, but is Kay doing all the whack job convert kit, you know, sequencing? No, I don't need to do that. I can train. That's the 10K work to give me leverage to have someone else do it. And so I'm in that phase right now. And to answer the very first question that you have, the thing that I realized that was missing in my work and life setup, I love building business. I realized that when you're selling your time for money, you're not building a business. And again, it's a great life, and it allowed me tons of flexibility surfing in Manhattan Beach, you know, daily. But I miss seeing how all the pieces work together. I miss having colleagues. And so that was where my transition from 1K to 10K began. It was, again, driven by the heart. I was like, wow, this is fun. Like, I am very much driven by fun. And I realized that I missed the complexity of building a business. And that's how I landed where I was. And after the course started to get a little bit more success, I just basically put a sign on, a virtual sign that said, sorry, coaching business is closed for now.
Amazing. And so many great points there. And I really appreciate also the way that you approach things, like heart-driven, sort of fun-driven, because I think it really does matter, because I'm sure there's a lot of points during the transition where you weren't so sure, right? Like I was saying earlier, all these other people so successful with their course or whatever. And you're like, okay, I got 20 students, or okay, mm-hmm. I got 20 students. I made a mistake in this area. And that's obviously how you learn. And I think another thing I picked up is that, you know, from what you just shared is that it seems like you do need to get some traction first before you start shifting that mindset to business owner. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit tough for people too. Like, there is a phase where you have to put yourself out there. You have to, you know, put up the Gumroad page. Was that difficult for you, or did you feel that it was just an experiment that could fail? Like, I'm wondering about that one critical piece, because that's the thing that you kind of really need to stick to first before switching over to the 10K kind of mindset.
Yeah. And so that I understand the question correctly, is it like, how did you get over that fear of putting yourself out there?
And yeah, like, how'd you
especially
get that initial,
asking
yeah, that initial traction. And potentially one thing I'd be curious about is how you even thought about packaging it, because it's something that I struggle with a little bit is, you know, you could have like, you know, the Substack version or whatever, that's like $10 a month. You could have the cohort course. Like, how did you, or did you actually not think about it so much and that let you move faster?
I would zoom out first and say, Steph Smith, who's a great blogger, I think she works at Toptal, one of those companies, but she's a great blogger. She has this framework where it's as a creator, you spend some amount of time creating value and then you shift to capturing value. And so lost in, or maybe not lost, but what gets buried a bit in my story is that I spent 4+ years creating value. For 4 years, I delivered 1 to 3 pieces of content, high quality, into your inbox. And the only thing I asked for was consider donating to my Patreon. So that just was a groundswell of goodwill. And if you think of her value, right, it was like 100% of creating value for 4.5 years. And so I would say of the first, of those 20, I think like 15 of them were buyers that said to themselves, finally, I can find a way to compensate this guy. Now, you can't build a business around that, but that's a great first start. So I would just, there's a whole arc behind even your first Gumroad page. And again, a lot of people don't have the luxury of 4.5 years. I had some savings, but I also had kind of built the coaching business to basically fund that, right? The coaching business was funding the content business, where normally it's the other way around, right? like the content business is trying to fund all the other stuff. So that was the first thing. But the second thing, I think you get into these questions of imposter syndrome and fear of failure. And that shit's hard, man. It is, I'm throwing up my sales page a week from Thursday, and I've definitely had, you know, scary dreams about it. I think that actually ironically ties to kind of more of the RadReads part of like intentional and self-examined life, because it gets really tricky, but the crux of that, the Gumroad page fear is rejection. And it's rejection, but it's more complicated than rejection. It's rejection of an identity, right? So if you say that my achievements, not you, David, but if one says that one's achievements are a reflection of their self-worth, then if the Gumroad page gets no buys, then self-worth falls to zero. And I mean, we do this all the time, right? We get rejected from the college we want to go to. We don't get that job at Goldman Sachs or at Google. We see that all the time. I mean, society has made it quite easy to say, hey, I work at Google. Like, I'm good. What does that mean? It means I'm smart. It means I'm probably wealthy. It means that people respect me. Like, just saying that I work at Google is that stamp. And so society has paved a road for us where things like Google and Harvard and McKinsey and whatever make it easy. They don't make it right, but they make it easy. And so, but what that's done is that says like, you have a badge. I am worthy of your respect, of your admiration, of your friendship, because I accomplished this thing. The Gumroad gets a little bit messier, right? No one's fucking heard of Gumroad outside of our nerdy creator circles. And now on top of that, you're reattaching a new identity. Like, I'm a successful creator, but the reality is you just don't know, right? And so it's my long-winded way of saying is that to get over that fear of putting myself out there, I've had to separate. And I just write this down. Like, before my launch, I say, people will ask for refunds and it doesn't mean you're a bad person. Like, I literally will write that to myself. And I will say, you know, I'll write, you put your heart and soul into the course. No matter what happens on sales, you did everything that you could do. So I write those affirmations down to myself, because it sucks. When someone asks for a refund, I like want to cry. I take it personally because I'm so invested. But they can ask for a refund because, you know, their aunt got sick and they just don't have the mind space. And I have a no questions asked policy. So I think that separating identity from achievement is a lifetime journey, especially in the Western world. You know, a capitalist Western world. Once you start pulling away from that, you can step out of, you know, conventional tracks, which come with conventional thinking. And then once you do that and you're able, I don't think you ever get there, but you're able to see the world through a different lens, you're like, oh my God, how was I blind to this for so long?
Yeah. And there's such a wide range of like values. And I know you've really explored this for yourself, that it is interesting how we shrink down what our value set is to these one small metric or badge, when really there's like a whole, you know, diversity of values that we can aspire to. And we kind of forget that we're this whole person, I suppose. And we're reducing ourselves essentially to this one metric, and definitely have struggled with that myself. I think teasing out your own identity from your work, I agree, is a journey, but it's very valuable when you do that. And following up with sort of, I guess, a little bit of that theme of like non-conforming, like breaking out of that and kind of figuring out how do I do things my own way or develop my own way. How did you balance, like you spoke about cohorts and that being something that you feel that someone else feels strongly about that maybe you do now as mm-hmm. well. How do you balance? One thing I kind of struggle with is building something that I really love, that feels like me, that is my own sort of creative expression. Mm-hmm. With like the formula side, I don't want to say it is kind of like a formula side of building, let's say, a course or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you want to speak to like the packaging and the journey aspect of, you know, what your students go through and how you balanced or what you learned. And maybe you learned, hey, the formula just works. So don't, you know, detract from your student's success, just follow it. Or maybe it's like, actually there were certain things I did do my, like, how did that feel for you?
Oh man.
Especially when you started, you know?
I mean, I could talk about when I started, but I'm going through this right now for
even better.
Something marketing, right? So marketing is something, I'm a engineer mindset, finance guy, numbers. Like I'm a logic brain guy. And I always had the naive belief that you build the best thing and people will buy it, right? I mean, you know that that's just not how the world works. So with marketing, and I worked with a fantastic marketing coach named Billy Bross. And what we recently had this debate, and I said to him, Billy, I hate this launch sequence bullshit. Jeff Walker formula, scarcity, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes, and I was like, I don't want to do it. It's not me. And then I gave him a specific one. I said, you know, there's a saying like, you want to sell Tylenol, you don't want to sell vitamins. Like your marketing should remove someone's pain versus selling them a future benefit. And I'm like, Billy, I don't like that because I'm a positive guy. I don't want to needle your insecurities to sell a product. And so here's what he said. So simple. He replied to me. He said, what's the outcome you want? Oh, interesting. That's a good question. And at first I had like a revenue number, say like 100K. And I'm like, no, I'm not, I'm doing it for the revenue. Part of the reason I'm doing it is for the revenue. And he's like, well, why are you doing it? And I said, I'm doing it because I want to give the students the best experience. And so he's like, okay, so if you want to give the students the best experience, what would happen if you did no marketing? And I was like, well, no students would come in. And so then he said, well, what would get the right students in the door? And I said, honestly, just being myself. And he's like, you're right. You're a good writer. People love your newsletter. You put a buy button in the bottom and you probably have a great business right there. Forget launch, seek Jeff Walker, none of that stuff. Then he said, but there are a few things that work that are known to work. Scarcity is one of them. He's like, you don't have to go crazy with scarcity, but you could just say with facts, because it's true, the window's open for 7 days and then in 30, and you can open it, it'll reopen in 3 months. He's like, that's not manipulative because that's actually what you want to create. And so, you know, he kind of inverts it. So we're thinking like, you know, number of sales, revenue, and he kind of really forced me, which is ironic because this is what I do with my own coaching clients.
Right.
He's like, well, what's this for? Right. And for me, it's not to maximize revenue. For me, it's to maximize the quality of my life, my student experience, and my experience with my students and the student outcomes. So Jeff Walker's launch sequence does nothing for my students' outcome. And so then there's this extra layer of creativity. It's like, well, how can you do things your own way? Right? And I'll give you an example. So I've been hammering at this, trying to find a framework to distill all of my ideas, ranging from networking to, you know, indie making to productivity into one thing. I've been trying this for years, like my GTD, you know? And I landed on this 10K framework. I don't know if it's it, but it's working. People like it. And so I was just like, well, what am I good at? I'm good at live one-on-one, live group coaching. So my launch event, instead of doing some weird Facebook, you know, blah, 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 I'm just like, let's talk every day for 30 minutes for 5 days about this. That's all I did. That was the event. It has 800 people RSVP. It's the most popular event that I've ever done.
Yeah.
So think about that. I abandoned the playbook. I'm still going to use a few of the tiny elements that work, like scarcity and social proof and like all that. I'm not a dummy either. I leveraged into what I wanted selfishly, right? And then I used my creativity to be like, this is how I would do it. And oh, by the way, everyone does a launch event before course, but it just came out organically. And so I think if you pressure test the assumption, well, first you got to know why you're doing it, right? If the goal was to maximize revenue, I'd be, you know, buying Facebook ads up the woods. I don't give a shit about that. I do not want to buy a Facebook ad in my entire life. That shit looks awful. But I like SEO. Why? Because I'm a natural writer. SEO is a fast tortoise strategy. You get five clicks, you get 10 clicks, you know, and then a year later you get 100 clicks.
No worries.
Hold on.
Yeah, no worries at all. Like I said, I'm going to edit it. So
right there. Oh man, I was in a
no, so in, good. Yeah, yeah. So
I was in a monologue.
Let me kickstart it. So okay, I love the things you're saying here because it really distills. It's funny, I think, for me, because I coach other founders and creators, and I think we have a similar directionally, you know, ethos, I think. And for sure, what I see happen, which I think you just perfectly illustrated, is that there is a model that people feel like they have to conform to. Mm-hmm. And as they try and sort of conform themselves into that model, they start to feel not free, distorted from who they are, what they want to express. And the only way sort of out of that is, I think, exactly what you just broke down, which is understand the elements, like you're saying. Understand that these are levers that you can pull, but don't think that you have to pull them the same way or do them the same way. Mm-hmm. And I remember speaking with this one creator and he was really stuck, creating, it was actually a course that he was creating and he just was so scared to send like this first like video out. And I was just like, why don't you just tell your audience exactly how you're feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And like start like the initial sequence of like kind of leading up to the course, just being like, I'm working through this, you know, and just like, when you get that freedom to not conform and be stuck and then just be like, oh, just how do I actually feel? Mm-hmm. How do I be vulnerable right now? How do I just think does make sense to me? It's just amazing how like, I just find there's so much less friction. Like suddenly people just like gravitate to it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the audience can pick up on it too. So I love hearing that story because I've experienced that and I've seen it with other people and it's just a really easy trap, I think, to fall into.
Yeah. And I really do think there's a funny enough, it's a Tony Robbins quote, which says the quality of your life is measured by the quality of your questions. And so all these creators, myself included, like I've got a few friends that have been nudging me and they're like, you'd be really good at Twitter. Like you're a good writer. You have a following. You kind of can think in those like little, you're a good storyteller. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like I'm going to do one tweet storm like every other day.
A thread with the, you know, yeah. Pointed down arrow. And
exactly.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, why am I doing this? Do I want more Twitter followers? I mean, sure, but are they the right students for my course? Does Twitter make me feel happy when I spend time on it? Is it going to meaningfully move the revenue needle? If so, is that what I want at that cost of like constantly having to repeat? And I realized that I was like, I had this like editorial, because that's how my brain works too. I can execute. And I had this like editorial calendar of 17 tweet storms that I was going to do over the next, you know, 38 days. And then I stepped back and it was starting to, like, my heart rate was going up and I was like snapping at my kids and my wife was like, why are you always on your phone? And I was like, yeah, because I want more Twitter followers. Like I had never, you know, I had never asked the question why that even mattered. Right. And I think that once you ask that question, it actually becomes quite clear. Right. And for me, it's, you know, I don't want a giant cohort of class. I want to clear a certain revenue threshold, which is totally within striking distance. I want to have deep one interactions with my students. I want them to be like, I want like a long-term and high CLTV rather than, you know, diffuse, you know, pop, you know, churn and burn to like high volume strategy, because it fits my personality. So that's like, so then I was like, and that's actually why I bring up SEO, because SEO is the ultimate fast tortoise strategy where you put in the time up front and then you get one, and then a month later you get three, and then a year later you get 3,000. And then what I love about SEO is it has a self-reinforcing moat. Like if you're good and you're on top, it's like really hard to catch people on top. But if you are on top and you just do the right maintenance, you will stay on top. And not only that, the moat will compound in your favor. And so that was like, Twitter to me is a very obvious. It's Twitter is like being a VC. It's like bet, boom. And like SEO is like owning a bond. And maybe it's just like, here's 2 cents. And so I know my personality, and I'm much more, I mean, I like to create the upside of VC, but like in terms of how I live my life, I'm not VC. I'm much more, you know, like I said, the fast tortoise. And so then I can align my marketing strategy, to my values, my preferences. And because it's me, it makes the whole thing better. Tiago has this great quote: I never want to compete against someone who's having fun. I'm having a lot of fun. And so that is, again, that's my own moat. And it's not to say like, in fact, when I get on with other Notion course creators, we all support each other. We like share each other's courses because we're all lifting each other up, right? It's not a competition, but I'm having fun. And I think that my readers can feel it in the work that I put out. And that in itself is just so powerful.
Yeah, I think you just amazingly also answered a previous question I had around packaging and structure, you know, pricing, and it just comes down to what makes sense to you or fits with who you are. Because interestingly enough, for me, I actually like the lower price, lower touch, like more scaled sort of solution. And I'm just kind of thinking this out loud as you're sharing, but yeah, how do you want to experience teaching or leading other people or sharing your knowledge? That needs to fit too. So also if you're just jumping into some other model because that's the way it's done, you know, for someone else, you're going to struggle because you're not going to have fun. You're going to feel like you're doing something that's not you. And what you're saying about someone who's having fun and competing against them, somebody who's constraining themselves to be something they're not, they're just going to half-ass it. And that's what you're saying, like around the Facebook ads. I mean, like the stuff you'd make just wouldn't even be good because you'd be so, you know, salty just even creating it.
Totally.
I have so many questions I listed out, you know, before we jumped on, but I'm so happy about the direction for where this conversation went. And I feel like this was a really great masterclass on the internal side of this transition to creating products and sort of the, you know, the areas you can get stuck in, the areas you can free yourself in. And so I just really appreciate you breaking that down, and definitely am going to send people over to your course when that launches. So make sure to send me stuff so I can, you know, put it out through my newsletter. I mean, that's the other thing. People just want you to win, like you're saying, when you take that approach. So I also think, you know, there's some goodwill you build with everyone else. And I know you've been doing that for so long through your own audience, and that gave you that leverage to sort of have people take a chance on you to validate and move it forward. My last question, I guess, I mean, I have a bunch more, but just to be respectful of your time, is once you set up the structure for this initial course, I don't know if it was cohorts to begin with or not. Did you learn anything where, knowing what you know now, you would have done something a little bit different? Was there any like just major, I guess, I don't want to say strategy, but like structure error that you've corrected that you feel like once you made that tweak, things made a big change, or was it more gradual?
There were a few. I think the first was, I didn't really appreciate the power of marketing in the early days. And so the early days I was selling features, like 19 modules on how to use toggles and relations and rollups. And then it's like, create a customized system so that you never have to worry about what you need to do again, ever again. right? I mean, that's a very subtle change. But if you have never understood marketing, you're just not used to think about that, right? Logic-based thinkers think about features, not benefits. And so that was the first one. And then, you know, I'm a big believer in these like giant things like design. This is why I love being a creator. Design, marketing, copywriting, which is a subset of it. What are some other ones? I can't think of a typography. I mean, these are subsets. Once you see something, rule of thirds, once you see something, you can't unsee it. Right. So when I learned about the right copy that goes onto a CTA, every single time I see a CTA now, I'm judging it. I'm like, ooh, that was a good one. And then I'll swipe it into like a Notion page. And so I think that, and so being exposed to those different areas so you don't have that blind spot. Right. If I hadn't realized the importance of marketing, there was no way. I mean, a big reason why the course went up was because I learned how to write like a good sales page. So knowing what you don't, right, the unknown unknowns, and then going in and just understanding a sliver of them, just enough to be dangerous. Right. I knew enough about SEO, just self-taught, that when there was, Notion came out, and like, obviously it's a total level playing field. And so I knew just enough that I would write the post that I would want to write, but I'd spend an extra, you know, half an hour doing the on-page formatting and like just, you know, installing the Yoast premium plugin. Just that little difference is why those pages now drive so much traffic. But I didn't pay an SEO consultant. I never took an SEO course, but I just knew just enough. Like I just knew the rule of thirds, right? Are you familiar? You're familiar with the rule of thirds.
Yeah, right.
But for your listeners, just in case, like the rule of thirds is there's a psychological reason why some pictures look better than others. And it's because of the framing in these, like basically these 4 points, which are in the third markers. And once you see that, you walk through an airport, you'll see like all those HSBC commercials, those beautiful ones, like in the tunnels, like no one's been in an airport for months now. Those are all rule of thirds. And so if you can find the rule of thirds for every discipline that touches your product, then you're going to be a badass because you have 10,000, 10K work, right? You have leverage into like a superpower. And if you can convert that leverage, then you're golden. And so I answered, you asked me a pragmatic question. I answered with theory, like I tend to do. So let me zoom out pragmatically. So understand marketing better. That was a big one. The second is like triple down on community. I kind of had community for the course as a bit of an afterthought. Like here's a Slack group. Now I have facilitators, moderators. I have a community editorial calendar, a knowledge base that attaches to the community. I'm all in on community. That's one of the best features of the course benefits, right? See? Community is the other one. And I would say a third one, I'm not super into it, but partnerships. Partnerships, right? You just tap into one person's audience. I'm doing a demo with super organizers next week, you know, high output project management with Notion. The videos that I've done with Ali Abdaal, like I think like 25% of my students came through one video with him. He's got a million viewers. Again, though, I didn't hump his leg and say, hey, can I get on your YouTube channel? You know, we'd been replying to each other's emails for years. And I think he initially invited me. He's like, hey, it's been a while. Like let's do your Notion setup. So again, doing things your own way. Like I refuse to do partnerships. Like, hey, you don't know me, but you want 30% of my revenue? Like, fuck no. Like that's not how I'm going to do it. How I'm going to do it, I'm going to spend 5 years becoming your friend, helping you as much as I can. And then one day you might be like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did something together? That's the K approach to partnerships. It's the fast tortoise approach. It's much slower, right? I could give out affiliate codes left and right and make a lot more money tomorrow, but that wouldn't be consistent with the long-term outcomes that I want.
Amazing. And I think those tidbits of information, the rule of thirds, that's what you pick up doing it, making mistakes, and, you know, wading your way through it. And so for the people who are in that process, no matter what, you're kind of winning, right? Because you're starting to get, oh, okay. And that's how you can actually do 10K work and apply leverage, because you see what other people don't see.
Exactly.
So when you hire that person, you know, to help you with something, it's because you see how it should function, you know, more than maybe the practitioner who sees how to execute on, you know, the design.
Totally.
Or whatever that is. Totally. So I want to be respectful of your time here. Thank you so much. That was, a super great conversation. And I really appreciate your perspective, the work that you create. So thank you. You know, feel free to just tell us where, you know, when the course is live, date-wise, I'll try to ship this right around that time, and where people can find you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And it's a pleasure to be on your show, and you ask great, great questions. Everything is at radreads.co. If you head over, I would say it's the best Notion resource on the internet, radreads.co/Notion. I think there's like 14 in-depth blog post tutorials on it, ranging from keyboard shortcuts to how to use databases to the unofficial Notion API. And if you go in there, if you sign up to our newsletter, you'll be alerted about the course. And then tweet at me. I try to respond to every tweet that's respectful and kind, which they 99.9% of them are. And it's KHEMARIDH, but instead of you writing that down, David will put in the show notes.
I'll post that. Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much. Great to catch up. And we'll chat again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, David. Take care.
That is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. And as always, if I can be of any help, feel free to reach out. My email is David, D-A-V-I-D, at deathtostock.com, deathtostock. You can also find my personal site at davidsherry.me. Would love to chat with you. If you found this valuable, please review, subscribe. That means a ton to me, and it just gives me the good vibe to keep going. So I'd really appreciate that as well. And that's it. We'll be back again soon.